Good afternoon. It's Friday, the 29th of March 2019, just after 1 o'clock. Welcome to UK Column News. Your host today, Mike Robinson. Myself, Brian Gerrish. We're also joined by David Scott and David Ellis. Well, of course, a very special day today.
Yes, happy Brexit Day, Brian.
Well, Brexit without the exit, really. So we just put up this because the UK Column has warned and warned and warned over a great many years that treachery was afoot inside the British government. And this was our headline page on at the beginning of 2014, Treason Softly Spoken. And we were warning that basically our constitution was being taken apart. Common law was being run roughshod over that. 2019, and it's definitely here, Mike.
It is. Now, yesterday, Mr. Burko said this, the motion, because Theresa May has decided to bring back her motion for the third time, the motion no longer includes the political declaration on our future relationship, and so is substantively different and can therefore go ahead. Now, this, of course, was because he had made a ruling based on Erskine May, the parliamentary procedure rules, that Theresa May could not bring the so-called meaningful vote back for a third time. And it would have to be substantively different. Well, in fact, she hasn't brought the meaningful vote back at all. This is not a meaningful vote because what she has done is that she has decided to bring a motion to vote on the withdrawal agreement and not on the future relationship. We'll get onto that in a second. So in the meantime, this morning, there have been all kinds of shenanigans going on in Parliament. Somebody in the chat box a few seconds ago saying it was comedy gold. Well, indeed it has been. It began with Geoffrey Cox, the Attorney General. Well, lots of people extremely unhappy about what's going on. Some of that unhappiness was being expressed yesterday evening because the whole idea for many people to vote on the withdrawal agreement without the political declaration on our future relationship with the EU makes a nonsense of the whole thing because they don't really know what they're voting for. But anyway, this is the tactic that Theresa May has used to try and get this through, or at least into Parliament for a vote. Now, there had been no intention to hold a sitting today. This was to be a day for MPs to go back and meet their constituents. But Andrea Leadsom yesterday decided that this should be the best thing to do instead. But Keir Starmer, as an example, who's the shadow Brexit secretary, said, take the political declaration off and it's completely blind. You have no idea what you're really voting for. So what are they talking about? Because I'm still not sure that it's widely understood exactly what this is about. Because, of course, there was one of the criteria that the EU set, and this is important because it was the EU that set it right at the beginning, was that as we leave, the process should be split in two. There should be a withdrawal agreement, and then secondary to that, or in parallel with that, a political declaration on the future relationship with the EU. We'll see in a second why that's important, but this is what it said. The withdrawal agreement, this will be an international treaty between the UK and the EU setting out the terms of the UK's withdrawal. And then the political declaration sets out the scope and terms for the future relationship. It will be turned into an international treaty or treaties after we have left. This is the most important part, and this is one of the reasons why very quickly the UK column was saying this is Brexit without the exit, because what you see on screen at the moment explains why it makes no difference whatsoever whether this deal is voted on or not. It doesn't matter whether we leave the EU in an orderly way through this agreement that Theresa May is proposing, or whether we crash out with a no deal, because there is going to be a future relationship. We're not going to end our relationship with the European Union. And as you can see, there are going to be international treaty or treaties after we have left. And the key point here, Brian, is that those treaties are not going to be the treaties that we've belonged to in the past. It won't be Maastricht, it won't be Lisbon, it'll be something different, which means that, well, you tell me what you think, but I think it's highly unlikely, and certainly there's no mention of it in the political declaration, it's highly unlikely that those treaties will include any mechanism for leaving in the future. So whatever we are brought back into in the future as part of this future relationship, that will be an end game for us because we will not be able to extract ourselves easily from that process at the end of the day.
And the key example to that, Mike, has got to be defence union.
Well, we're coming on to that.
Which I know we're going to cover.
Absolutely. So the withdrawal agreement, just so that everybody understands, covers citizens' rights, separation issues, the implementation period, some kind of financial settlement, so we've got to pay to leave, governance and protocols. But it is the political declaration which is important, and here it is. Part one, initial provisions. Part two, economic partnership. Part three, security partnership. Now, this is the key point, because defence is not mentioned, but what does this term security mean? Well, in fact, Theresa May has told us what it means. We pushed out this little bit of video a couple of weeks ago. Security, as far as the EU is concerned, as far as our relationship with the EU is concerned, covers civilian law enforcement and judicial, foreign policy, intelligence and defence, and also they include what they describe as thematic cooperation, which includes cyber, health and civil contingencies. So when you see the word security with respect to the EU and our future relationship with the EU, this is what we're talking about. It's all encompassing: civilian law enforcement, defence, cyber, health, civil contingencies. Now, that has come from the EU exit assessment of the security partnership. This is a UK government document. You can look it up for yourselves. And it goes on to say this: in the event of no deal, cooperation will continue only on the basis of non-EU international agreements. And that includes, for example, the bilateral defence agreements between Britain and France, France and Germany. Now, of course, there are many more of these bilateral agreements between Britain and other EU countries, but that is the key point. And it also says that in the event of no deal, all domestic EU member states legislation is in place to enable this. So that's got to be done. And it has been done, because that was done through the European Union Withdrawal Act 2018. So maybe I could ask David Ellis for a bit of comment here, but what seems to be the case, what I'm arguing is the case here, David, is that it matters not what happens in Parliament today, because we're still going to be, no matter, you know, we might have a few months of difficulty while people take advantage of a no deal scenario, but at the end of the day, there is going to be some kind of future relationship with the European Union. Security, all encompassing, is a key part of that, as Theresa May has stated time and again. This really is Brexit without the exit, because we end up in a scenario where we can't get out of whatever these future treaties are going to be.
That's completely correct, Mike. That is exactly the case. And I've just had that confirmed by quite a senior parliamentary researcher this morning when we sort of went over all this, is that the new, in effect, they're saying it's a new relationship, but it's a new treaty, locks us in with less. We become a permanent vassalage, and there's no way out. There's no way in that in the framework that's currently being proposed for us to come out. So you're quite right. Regardless of what Parliament is doing at the moment, which is to an extent ancillary, but it's almost incidental to this key point. So we've seen Parliament circumvented and subverted, so that the EU are dictating the new script, and all that's happening is Theresa May is delivering that script. Now, I've been told this morning, this is quite important, so this has come from this direct source, that ministers are now saying that they are not permitted to pitch ideas and discuss in cabinet. They are not permitted to take notes. They simply come to cabinet and listen to what Theresa May is reading to them, which is clearly the EU script, and off they go. That's it. So we don't have a functioning government. What that frankly sounds like is a dictatorship.
Absolutely. Well, David Scott, let's talk about joining forces, because we want to talk about EU Defence Union a little bit here. Now, we've covered this a lot over the last couple of years, but this continues to be a key point that Parliament refuses to engage on, and we've got to force Parliament to engage on it.
Indeed. Now, this is an extract from a EU document summarising all of the progress they've made towards a European Defence Union. It's called Joining Forces. That's a clue. And the first figure here says more progress in the last 2 years than in the last two decades. So what we've seen, and the vote for Brexit seems to have been some sort of spur to this, is that the speed of progress towards EU military union, towards the European Union becoming an empire, has hit high gear ever since the Brexit vote. While we've been all discussing Brexit and the ins and outs of it, the European Union has transformed itself and is continuing to do so.
And so we have Emmanuel Macron here saying we have to build a new European sovereignty through which we can give the clear and firm answer to our citizens that we can protect them responding to these world disorders.
Yeah, so all you see across the continent, particularly in France and Germany, is senior politicians being quite open with what is on offer here. It's an empire. They're calling for an empire. It has sovereignty vested in it. The sovereignty must be given up by the member states and passed to the middle, passed to the centre for central control. And in return, we will look after you. That's the deal. That's the deal that's been done. Oh, and by the way, we're also a superpower as a result. None of this is being discussed in our own parliament. None of this has been mentioned by our own politicians.
You sent me earlier on a little bit of video that was recorded by Bloomberg at Davos with Ursula von der Leyen, who's the German defence minister. And there were a number of points that struck us about them, about this little video clip. So what we did was we just watch it for yourselves and see what you think.
First of all, our collective defence, we are ironclad committed to NATO. NATO of 29. That is collective defense Article 5. But there are problems and issues where I do not see NATO, but Europe has to be able to act.
Though this transatlantic alliance with America is extremely important and we need to maintain it, the best partnership is a partnership where we have our own capabilities that are also strong.
I was talking about Africa. This is not a typical place for NATO. We are very committed to NATO and other places, but Africa is a place where we need to be able to act as Europeans.
For example, one of the things that my institute does is work in Africa, and at the moment we're particularly focused on the Sahel group of countries. That's that band of countries across the north part of sub-Saharan Africa, where you've got exploding populations, dire poverty, radicalization and extremism. We may well face the next wave of migration and extremism from those countries. It makes perfect sense for Europe to have the military capability to help those countries with their security.
And for that, we created the European Defence Union,
right,
to have a comprehensive approach with diplomacy, economic development, well, and the military means.
So, David, whose policy is this? Is this Germany's policy? Is it Tony Blair's policy, or is it somebody else's policy that just happens to, that all these various people are engaged with?
That's an excellent question. It's kind of everywhere. It's like the way that people talk about Goldman Sachs and banks. I was just looking here, Rolling Stone said the first thing you need to know about Goldman Sachs is that it's everywhere. It's the world's most powerful investment bank. It's a great vampire squid wrapped around the face of humanity, relentlessly jamming its blood funnel into anything that smells like money. Well, we've kind of got the same, but on a political level.
David Ellis, just briefly give us a couple of thoughts about that little video clip.
They're using the same script, aren't they? So this, as far as I can see, I mean, they're saying it goes back decades. It probably goes back to John Major, in effect. That's probably where it sort of started, although obviously the referencing that we've got goes back to 1948 in the Cabinet Office under Attlee. But nonetheless, there must have been some kind of resistance with Maggie. I know this because Tebbit told me she said no to Defence Union. So clearly, the leadership subsequent, so in Britain, has been, so that's Major, Blair, Brown, Cameron, and now May, are all Remain. They are all pro-EU. But what we're seeing is the same stuff that Blair is talking about is literally in tandem with what Ursula von der Leyen, the German defense minister, is saying. So they're clearly working to a joint script. Who's writing that script is the question. Now, we can say who isn't writing it, and that's not British MPs or the British Parliament.
Indeed.
We can say that.
Yes.
What I was going to answer that is we come on to this thing of our own civil service, as was, that should have been producing policy on all these areas or helping MPs form policy in all these areas. But we find that they are now complicit in this wider EU policy, UN policy, new rules-based international order policy. The politicisation of our own civil service is a key part of this. And I don't think it can be any, or it's a coincidence, isn't it, that we've now got a spook in charge. Mm. We've had Common Purpose buried in it. Now we've got the spook in charge and people rubber stamping. This is a coup that's taken place in this country.
Well, let's come back to the lovely Ursula and what she had to say. Africa is a place where we need to be able to act as Europeans. And for that, we created the European Defence Union. David, what are your thoughts on this? And particularly, you know, you seem to be drawing some parallels here.
Yeah, she went on, the Bloomberg interview went on and said, well, you know, are you talking about an EU army that would, you know, entirely defensively project power across the Mediterranean, which is obviously North Africa? And the answer was essentially, well, yes. And you heard it there in the Blair speech that he's seeing this, that we're going to help these people with the security concerns. Helping people with the security, we know how that works. We've seen it in Libya, we've seen it in Syria, we've seen it in Iraq. So we know what Mr. Blair means when he talks about helping people with their security. So we're talking about military intervention in North Africa. The diagram you see here, first off, is the diagram from the EU. This is their view of the world, right? The dark blue bits, at the moment still including us, that's the EU. The green sections is the eastern neighbourhood, that includes Crimea. And those are areas that they're looking to join to the EU in the more distant future. The light blue bits are the existing states that are about to be part of the enlargement, although we've obviously got problems with Turkey. And the orange section is the southern neighbourhood. So this is another zone of influence. So they're looking for EU policies, EU industrial, political and military might to call the shots in this hinterland as well. And they're building an army to do it. Now, it did strike me that there was a name for that, and that was Deutsche Afrika Korps. And it was a very good army, it was thought well of by even its opponents. But that seems to be where we're going.
So Ursula went on to say it's a strategic topping, helping us. Oh, sorry, this is the topping out ceremony for all this.
This was a quote that was picked up about a week ago in an interview with a Greek newspaper, and it wasn't picked up in any of the British press, and it's absolutely astonishing. So the piece was called that we are building a European military union, European defence union. And during the interview, she said this. She said, it's not an army in the conventional sense. It's a strategic topping, helping to build what we call European strategic culture. So when they say that you're going to have, well, there'll still be national control over militaries and there'll still be national competence, in a trivial town council sort of way, that will remain true. They'll still have that cover. It's just in every important way, it won't be true. We just have to put the pieces together as we go along. I envisage a kind of roofing ceremony for the European Defence Union during the upcoming Council Presidency of Germany during the second half of 2020. So we now have a date for this. It's going to be finished. The roofing ceremony is a reference to the common building technique, or actually pagan-derived building ceremony. When you put the last piece of a structure in place, you have a little ceremony. They often sit an evergreen tree on top of the building as they do this. This is a ceremony that means the structure is complete. That's going to be in the latter half of 2020. And at that point, there is no individual sovereignty left because the European Union combined military will call all the shots that actually matter.
David Ellis, we're going to move on from this subject, but just some of your thoughts on Ursula.
That's completely correct there, David Scott. And there's two key issues here. The EU are not building or creating anything militarily. They are unifying existing national militaries into and under their single point command and control. So all of the people that have paid taxes for this stuff nationally previously, all of that is going to be taken for free by the EU, and then the EU are going to issue everyone with a tax bill and then conscription for your children. That's the most likely outcome. So let's be very, very mindful. When we hear these political avatars talking about we've created or we're building, it may well be at some stage this is pitched out through British MPs, but they are not creating or building anything. They are unifying the stuff we've already got.
Absolutely. Right. Now, David Scott, Georgia. Well, before we mention Georgia, because this is really about NATO now, you'll be pleased to know, David, that Jens Stoltenberg was reconfirmed for another 2 years yesterday by the Atlantic Council. And so he is in a job. And I'm sure, Federica Mogherini is going to be delighted that he has got the job for another 2 years. So that's fantastic news, isn't it?
Well, it's been such a success, they're going to keep the band together, I think.
Absolutely. So now, Georgia, this is Jane's 360. The headline is Georgia pushing out in all defence areas to boost its chances for NATO membership.
Yes, as we'll see here, NATO membership and EU membership are one and the same thing in the eastern neighbourhood. And the issue of the EU army is it's not defensive, it's expansionist. It's expanding in the east against Russian interests and it's expanding in North Africa. And that's the agenda. Now, you see here that they're saying, well, okay, it's been 10 years since we said Georgia was going to become, well, in fact, 17 years of effort, 10 years since the announcement that Georgia was going to become part of NATO. But we're making very good progress and Georgia's pushing hard and, you know, it's all going ahead. And so we're looking at Georgia, with all of its outstanding conflicts with Russia, becoming part of NATO, part of a communal alliance, part of a shared defence. So you see the build-up, the threat against Russia, and the build-up of the drums of war there. A further slide here is, it reads here, it's concerning an exercise. So between March 18 and March 29, the NATO Georgia exercise 2019 is taking place at the NATO Georgia Joint Training and Evaluation Centre, Tbilisi. The military exercise was officially opened on March 18. So we're having joint exercises. So this is a very sensitive bit. There was a war with Russia there not very many years ago. Most of the Western press will report that the nasty Russians invaded poor plucky little Georgia. And you know, the strange thing is, I remember this happening at the time and I don't quite remember that was the sequence of events. But we're seeing this subsuming of Georgia into the Western Atlantic geopolitical construct that is NATO and the EU.
We have a tweet here. This is a Georgian president, is that right? Saying, glad to welcome NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg to Georgia. We're grateful for his continued support of Georgia's sovereignty and territorial integrity, reforms and Euro-Atlantic aspirations. This visit is another reiteration that NATO-Georgia relations are on all-time high.
Yes, and if you look at the EU, this is part of they're also saying that Georgia is the leading part of the Eastern neighbourhood and is leading in its efforts to get to integrate into the EU as well. So NATO and the EU, the European Union, the European Empire, are working to an entirely common purpose.
Stoltenberg delighted with this, as we'll see now.
We fully support Georgia's Euro-Atlantic aspirations. At the summit last week, all 29 allies reaffirmed that Georgia will become a member of NATO.
So, David, you know, what is Russia supposed to think about this?
The only rational thing for Russia to think is, well, we're going to be fighting a regional war over the Crimea, and we're going to be fighting a regional war over South Ossetia, and there will be other ones, I'm sure, as well. Russia must be under attack. Constant pressure, constant eating away at its borders. And the Russian response will, I would assume, be to resist.
Indeed. Now, let's come back to the EU then. And 2019 calls for proposals for the European Defence Industrial Programme development.
Yes, this is just to give a flavour of the scale of what we're dealing with here. So 2019, the EU, is, in terms of its central budget, its central management of the military industrial complex, is looking for the following: multi-purpose unmanned ground system, permanent air or space capabilities for intelligence, surveillance and reconnaissance, cyber situational awareness and defence capabilities, positioning, navigation and timing and satellite communication capabilities, European command and control system, upgrade of current development and next generation ground-based precision strike capabilities, air combat capabilities, future naval platforms and innovative and future orientated defence solutions. That's a shopping list for an empire.
It is indeed. And David Ellis, one of the things that strikes me about this, you know, every week almost we're presenting more evidence of what the EU is up to. And as we've said from the beginning of this programme today, Britain absolutely going to be part of that, is part of that already. And Theresa May, in all her statements, has made clear that Britain's connection with European security, which includes defence, is going to be of greater breadth and depth than, and that's no matter what happens with respect to this current Brexit process. So you know, the point is that this is happening, and yet when members of the public, when our viewers and listeners write to their MPs, inevitably their letters get forwarded on to somebody like Freddie Howe, Lord Freddie Howe, for comment. The form letter comes back, and there's a denial that any of this is taking place.
Yes, it's a consistent pattern. So it's very clear that the EU map that you put up there a moment ago, with the eastern neighbourhood and the Africa boundaries, pretty much draw out where the battle lines and the interventionist policy is going to be seen out. How we get these MPs to start talking about this, it's going to take collective, persistent pressure. And we're seeing some movement, but we have to do more. As I keep saying, the only instrument available to us in this country to do anything about this is our MPs and Parliament. There is no other way of dealing with this. So it's very simple. Whatever pressure we've got at the moment, we have to gain more. It's absolutely straightforward. And the conversation cannot be from Brexiteer to Brexiteer. The conversation must be from Brexit to your MP, regardless of who that MP is. And however you do that, individually or in a group, or however you propagate it, we are going to have to do more and quickly.
Well, David, I can agree with that more. And I thought at this point we'd just have a look at what the reaction is amongst ordinary people in UK. This was provided from last weekend, when, of course, we had a lot of Remainers going to London in order to do their thing. And we got a little video clip. This is taken on board one of the coaches. It was People's Vote. We'll talk about that a little bit more. But let's have a look at what they were up to.
Our MPs must know it's true. We should stay in the EU. Bye, bye, Brexit. we've got now. Clearly we should call the whole thing off now. Brexiteers have had their try. Let us wave a deal goodbye. Brexit, bye-bye. Yes, didn't we?
Well, there you have it. We're today, UK column, we're putting out factual information. We're talking about video reports of the EU building an empire, building a military defence union. We're talking about expansionist plans. We're talking about the EU ramping up a war with Russia. And we have Remainers paid for with Lib Dem money or European money singing little songs on a bus and pleading to be allowed to stay in Europe. David Scott, I nearly want to laugh, but I know I mustn't. But this is so, I'm lost for words, aren't I? These people are simply brain dead to not see that we've got a vicious dictatorship being formed. Our country has been sold away to this vicious organisation. And we've got these people in their little T-shirts singing songs in praise. Are they on drugs?
Brain dead, brainwashed, certainly. This is the power of The Guardian and the BBC, and you get to a point where the entire worldview is dependent on not listening. Sometimes you find if you speak to them, whatever you say, whatever factual information you put forward, the response is laughter. Because to actually question this belief system, because it's never done, things are never examined, nothing's ever discussed. They react as though if you start to question it, you start to look at facts, that you're saying something that's absurd, because it's so unknown in that little bubble, that bubble's becoming a bunker. Now, there was a great Scottish philosopher, many of them, who said that people go mad in herds, but they regain their sanity one at a time. And that's the task in front of us.
Well, look, just they were wearing People's Vote T-shirts. And if you look at the People's Vote website and who we are, you see, I think there's about 10 Remain groups there listed. People like Open Britain and the European Movement, UK, Britain for Europe and so on. And David Ellis, what struck me as I was looking at that is, you know, this organisation was able to put media reports saying 1 million people on the streets in London last weekend. So we've got quite active groups on the Remain side. But all the Brexit groups have gone, just like Nigel Farage disappeared as soon as the referendum result, you know, in a political sense, once the referendum result was announced. What happened in the Remain side with respect to the campaign groups? They've all disappeared.
The Leave side, it's pretty straightforward. You know, you've got, I think I can probably best sum this up by this parliamentary researcher that spoke to me this morning, said essentially this, that the EU control all of the parties now through their networks, and the Cabinet Office and the Dirty Seven, the civil servants there, are absolutely ardent, dedicated EU purveyors. Mrs. May is purveying nothing other than the EU script she's given. So what outlet do we have other than, you know, relatively a minority in Parliament for Leave? So this is the task ahead, is that we need to have, you know, 350 Leave MPs. Well, we've only got about 100 and something, I think, probably, isn't it? It's 120. I can't remember what the exact figure is, something of that nature. So we need to at least double that. That's what we've got to do.
Yep, David, you've said it. Well, let's come on to that point in just a minute. Something I'll say about those people, the Remainers going to London last weekend, is that people who were in London, including some friends of mine, were there to see what was going on. And they were saying it's remarkable. The Remainers were all they were described as white, overwhelmingly white people, middle class, lovies was one of the expressions used. These are very comfortable people, relatively well off. But it was very interesting that there was hardly a black face to be seen amongst the people going to London to, you know, beg to stay in the European Union. Whilst on the other hand, the organisations who want to leave, who are being branded as extremist, are the ones that are turning up with a good cross section of society in this country. So there's a couple of people in the chat room making this point at the moment, and I'm going to say, yes, I know, because this was also reported to me. Now, let's have a look at what the press is doing. Well, of course, they're ramping up fear. Express here, Brexit latest. What to stockpile in case of a no-deal Brexit. And after quite a bit of waffle, they say that there's still plenty of British-made staples such as flour, oats, lentils, sugar, salt, vinegar and mustard. Well, I'm not sure how you live off vinegar and mustard, but presumably there's some sense there. They're telling us we're going to lose olives, pepper, pasta and rice. And the lady in the video clip, the economist, says, I think we should be stockpiling. That's a good idea. So this is all raising fear. It's essentially fake news. This is occupying the minds of those Remain lovies so they don't think about the dictatorship being built. We've got CNN here ramping up, obviously, to try and get us towards the violence. So London gears up ahead of planned protests. And here's a lorry delivering some pretty heavy steel blocks. And then to come to your point, David, about the MPs, this is a letter to Justin Walker from the British Constitution Group. She's replying to a query that he put to her about the EU Defence Union. And she says she's not in favour of a single European defence force. So basically, this woman, this MP, has not got a clue what has taken place. She doesn't see the documents that we're talking about because she only reads the EU library scripts. Complete ignorance. We're going to call her a lovey as well. She doesn't know what it's called. It's called the EU Defence Union, Sarah Wollaston. And have a look at this one. A note from Johnny Mercer. Here comes Johnny. He's got really excited because he can't really explain away the fact that he's been let down by the Tory party. I'll just read you a bit. There's a lot of it. Good evening, fellow Plymouthians. We're in parlous times for sure. I'm incredibly disappointed that the Prime Minister has failed to deliver Brexit by March the 29th, as I and my colleagues have now promised you for 2 years. You know that for me, values and ethos are the centre points from which everything else in politics flows. I came into politics because I was fed up of inauthentic politicians who failed to keep their promises. The deal on the table is not good enough, hence why I voted against it in January. I wanted the Prime Minister to redouble her efforts to both prepare for no deal and get a better deal for us leaving the European Union. She's failed to do either. We now face two bad choices. My MP colleagues, despite promising for so long that no deal was better than bad deal, have made it very clear they will not allow a no deal to pass. This is a flagrant breach of trust. And on he goes. He goes on and on and on. But David Ellis, this is the type of politician who has absolutely sold us down the river. He's been in the military. He's supposedly a defence expert. And yet he would not tell the truth about EU Defence Union, which could have toppled the whole house of cards with respect to the staying in the European Union.
I'm gonna make a gambit here. I'll give the UK column £100 for every time Johnny Mercer says EU Defence Union. So if anybody out there wants to take up this challenge, if they can get Johnny Mercer in a formal fashion that we can use as sort of evidence, i.e. like he tweets it or says it in an email or something of that nature, I will give the UK column £100 for every time Johnny Mercer says EU Defence Union.
Okay, well, thank you very much for that offer. I think you're on pretty safe ground, though. What are other people doing? Well, this was pointed out to us that Democracy 17.4 are calling for peaceful non-cooperation. They say we can't trust the MPs, we can't trust Parliament. What we need to do is peacefully withdraw consent and cooperation with the government. And I have to say, just thinking on the spot, there is some immense common sense to this. We can't have violence because we know what we're going to get, and that is what's been meted out to the French yellow vests. But withdrawing consent, withdrawing our cooperation, withdrawing our work from supporting the government is only going to do one thing, and that is going to bring the government down. Now, people can judge whether that's right or wrong, but interesting that 17.4 are pushing that out.
Well, yesterday, Lynn Thayer's extradition hearing.
Yes, well, the result is that the lawyers acting for the French authorities want to put forward new evidence. The defence lawyers are going to contest this and said so at the hearing. The judge was a bit ambivalent. He said he couldn't quite remember what he said in the previous hearing because he'd had quite a few cases in between. But there's now going to be a new hearing taking place later in April. And we'll also add that David Noakes, who should have been released from Wandsworth a week ago on tagged release, is still in prison. And the delay is apparently due to administration problems between the prison and probation services. So we're told that our prisons are improving. But as David knows full well, certainly Melanie Shaw knows full well, we've got absolute chaos and, quote, administrative failure.
Now, a quick reminder, there is a 5G event taking place. Ian R. Crane speaking at it. And that is Dogmills Memorial Hall in Wales, SA43-3ET. It's actually not that hard to get to. So if anybody's able to get along to that, it's very close to Cardigan City. So do get along to that if you possibly can, 7 p.m. tonight. Just a quick reminder, if you like what we're doing and you'd like to help us out, please join the UK Column community. You can do that at ukcolumn.org/community. Now, David Scott, what has Ms. Sturgeon been up to?
Well, she was protesting against Brexit and in favour of cancelling it in the interest of democracy by some means of logic that I couldn't quite follow. And she took this selfie. Now, I'll come back to this whole subject of selfies and the significance. But here she stands smiling next to the man who was an integral part of a decision to send this country to war on a lie and cost hundreds of thousands of innocent lives. Okay, so just always want people to remember that image as we get later on in the news. We've got one or two other things we want to talk about, photographs and the consequences for having them taken.
Well, yes. Oh, right. Sorry, Brian, did you want to cover some of this or will we move on to that story that David wants to talk about?
Well, just do this very quickly because we're just hammering the politicians here. But I came across Amber Rudd's Twitter page where there was this tweet. What does it say? Every boy and girl born in this country should be able to reach their potential and dream big. Every person should go into the workplace knowing that a better future awaits them and their family. These are the ideals that are at the heart of my work every day. Contrast that with politicians been ramping up war on false evidence. But this caught my eye. I'll come back to it another day. But this is a statement by the Cats Protection Charity. And their vision is a world where every cat is treated with kindness and understanding of its needs. And I'm not being funny here. There's a certain similarity in the rhetoric. Are we going to protect every cat in the world? I don't think so. Is Amber Rudd going to protect and make life beautiful every child in the world? These are people living in a very dangerous dreamland, while the reality we are showing is of a really dangerous political system being built. I just find their attitude is really astonishing.
Okay, David, we're right out of time, but let's end with selfies and Jordan Peterson.
Yes, here we see the Church Times reporting today, Cambridge defends decision to rescind the offer of visiting fellowship made to Dr. Jordan Peterson. Continue here. The Faculty of Divinity at the University of Cambridge rescinded an offer to Jordan Peterson. Vice Chancellor of the University, Professor Tope, issued a statement on Monday after the 5 days after the Faculty of Divinity had announced the offer had been rescinded. He confirmed that the decision to rescind it had been taken after the faculty had become aware of a photograph of Professor Peterson posing with his arm around a man, wearing a T-shirt with the slogan, "I am a proud Islamophobe." And you see the offending T-shirt here. This T-shirt listed all the things this man thought that he opposed about Islam, and the bottom of the T-shirt that said that it was not against any individuals, but against the philosophy that he was making a stand. Now, apparently, this is not permissible in the University of Cambridge anymore to stand against the philosophy. Dr. Peterson's response, and this is why a lot of people are very fond of him, he said the faculty has decided that kowtowing to an ill-informed, ignorant and ideologically addled mob trumped participating in an extensive online experiment in mass Christian and psychological education. There we have it. So Nicola Sturgeon could stand next to someone who is significantly responsible for the death of hundreds of thousands of innocent people. That seems to be okay. Jordan Peterson stands next to a man in a T-shirt, and that T-shirt says things that you're not meant to say, even though no people are being threatened, let alone actually injured, and that gets him removed from polite society, it would seem. It's a very, very bad day for free speech.
There we go.
Okay, David, thank you very much for joining us. I'll just end the programme, and it's Friday as well, and of course it's Brexit without the exit day, is that all the evidence has been in front of us that our politicians were not to be trusted. They were going to betray this country and betray the voters. They were prepared to commit treason or misprision of treason if they turned a blind eye to what was happening. All this has been hidden in plain sight. We now know it, and it's up to every one of us to do something about it. And I will add that it is still very clear that the politicians committing the treason in this country are utterly terrified of the general public doing the most simple things, receiving letters from them where their guilt is being pointed out, or emails or tweets, or being challenged, or being challenged at public meetings in particular. So don't sit at home thinking you can't do anything. The simple things done by enough people can make a huge difference. And I think we owe it to our children and grandchildren to take that action. Okay, that's it for UK Column today. We'll be back at the same time on Monday.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Vor der Kaserne, vor dem großen Tor, steht eine Laterne und steht sie noch davor. Dort wollen